Welcome and thank you for tuning in. My name is Eva Lialle and you are listening to Maritime Unity Talks. Today we will talk with the legendary Tim Watcher on red flags and abuse. Hi, Kim. Thank you for being here on the show with us today.
Hi, Eva. It's very nice to be back again and to share some time with you.
I think you are legendary, first of all. The subject of today is pretty serious. It's about red flags and abuse. But I like that we are having a little bit of a laugh from the start because it's good to start with this. And you are legendary. So could you please start by telling us a little bit about you?
I'm going to give you a slightly different introduction just to prove the point that I am not a one-dimensional creature. So I started my career apprenticing as a master photographer a long time ago, but then the stock library market started to happen. So that market for being a photographer disappeared. And so I went into developing primitive AI systems, pattern recognition engines, and context mapping and nonlinear narratives before eventually ending up working offshore and doing all that stuff that people actually do know me for. So I've done a few different things. I also cook.
That's really good to know. I can see in your background that you're also making music and having pretty awesome computer deck.
The computer's called Daisy and I built her myself. And Daisy is a beautiful monster.
Very beautiful, if I must say. Yes. So thank you so much for being here today. On the previous episode, we talked a little bit about being able to be your authentic self and about how you can be safe and inclusive enough to allow people to be their authentic self or to allow yourself to be your authentic self. And today we're digging a little bit into red flags. People are explaining a little bit more about red flags because I think it will be good to recognize this. And maybe we can start off by explaining what happens in your body and in your nervous system when you are in an unsafe situation or when you have a feeling that something is not good for you or maybe dangerous even. You will have internal red flags going on. Your nervous system will go into the survival mode state, which can look different for everybody and for every situation, of course.
I think there are different... It is, as you said, it's different for everybody, but I also think that different types of red flags can create different responses. It's interesting because I'm thinking this really does tie into... You know, we talked in the last episode about authenticity, and one of the biggest thing to prevent people becoming authentically who they are was fear. And of course, red flags are indicators of things that maybe we should be cautious about or actively scared of or flee or fight or whatever the response is. And it's really interesting because I've been thinking about it while you and I have talked about it and listening to what you say. And if you put me on a ship, which is an environment I'm very comfortable with, like a big construction vessel with 300 or 400 men on it, $1 million a day, and we're in a very hostile marine environment, or even on the edge of what might be a conflict zone, or we're doing something really dangerous, then that entire culture revolves around safety, recognizing red flags, situational awareness, and handling it in a calm with a calm methodology and in accordance with procedures. And I have been through countless situations that are high risk, countless situations where there have been major problems and failures of systems and an enormous danger at sea. And I don't get scared at all. My reaction in that situation is to handle it. I organize the people into the teams they need to be. I make sure everything's happening the way it should be. And it's just absolutely natural for me. And I'm very conscious of the situation, very conscious of the risks like there's a fire, the fire spreading towards that's an electrical transformer. Let's get that shut down. There's a diesel tank over there. Let's try and douse that with water to reduce the temperature and stop it igniting. All of that stuff, whatever it is, confined spaces, gases building up, everything, not a problem at all. And even when somebody's had a catastrophic injury, okay, it's happened. Now we need to get critical, urgent care there. We need to handle that. We need to get medevac, all the way. Whatever it is, not a problem. I could talk about that for hours. Just that. But if it's sexual violence, if it's a direct personal threat to me, my identity, my autonomy, my body autonomy, if the threat of sexual violence, I do the exact opposite. I freeze. I go into full trauma mode and I freeze. I withdraw. I become non-responsive and I can't cope with it at all.
Thank you so much, Kim, for pointing this out. And while you were talking about it, I can already hear a little bit difference in your voice and in the energy when you started to talk about the difference into this other system, this other kind of red flags. So I think when you look at the practical red flags, like the physical thing that, like a fire, okay, there's a fire, I know what to do, you have to put on a suit, you have to extinguish the fire. But especially when you're a woman, maybe you can recognize this, because these other kind of red flags are about you, right? They're about your existence or your ability to be in a situation or even to be alive, maybe. And to explain something about red flags, I was an officer on board of a ship and there was a captain and a helmsman at the wheel. And we were going into port and maneuvering, getting ready to lay the ship near the quay. And then the captain made a mistake, a really common mistake. So instead of hard to port, he would say hard to starboard. In a normal situation, it will be very likely for you to speak up about that. Oh, no, yeah. I think you made a mistake right here. So it's not hard to port, it's hard to starboard.
Yeah, other port, captain, not that port, the other port.
Yeah. Or just a mistake. But in this, what I wanted to explain with naming this example is that in this situation, I was not able to say this. I was just standing there. I heard the mistake, but it was told by a captain who actually was bullying me. But he was telling me on a daily basis that my voice was too high, that my appearances were not fitting the job, that I will get pregnant sooner than later, because that's what you do, that he will never have his daughter in the same profession or in the same job in the maritime sector or and certainly not on the ship. Things like that. And of course, this is just an example to show what red flags can look like. And also, it's an example to show what can actually happen to you. If you are living in an environment like this, and I think a ship is a very good way to indicate this, because you cannot go home, right? If you are living in an environment like this, with these microaggressions, you call them, right? Because they're not life-threatening, but they can make you feel like you don't belong, that you're not part of the team or that you not cannot be there. So when you experience this, the red flags in your own nervous system, they will become super violent. Like they will become, I don't know, red flags all the time. And it will shut you down in a way. And it will shut you down in a way that you're also not able to speak up about simple things like saying, oh no, captain, you made a mistake. And I think that's very important to be conscious about. Especially for people who are not experiencing these red flags in their own nervous system. Because if you know that this can happen to somebody, then you can be a little bit more aware of it.
It's one of those things that, like, sometimes people, and I'm not quite sure why, it's not that they shouldn't get the red flags, but they just genuinely lack situational awareness and they have no recognition of the color red or the fact there's a flag waving in front of them. One example might be in an industrial work site, you're doing a heavy lift and you've got several hundred tons of steel suspended by a thin wire just a few meters above the ground. And if you don't know any better, you might walk under it, not realizing that is like the biggest no, you do not do it. Or, you know, if you are, say, a 15-year-old girl just out a bit late at night and you walk down a dark alleyway in a violent city with a high crime rate, you might not realize that you're putting yourself into a really risky situation. And it doesn't mean that you'll deserve anything bad to happen to you, but you're increasing the probability of it enormously by doing something like that. Or you get tourists that get off a bus in a city or a country they've never been to before, oblivious to the fact that there's like a gang of pickpockets literally walking behind them, just deciding which one is the most innocent, easy-looking bit of prey to get their money in. And other people are acutely aware of red flags or invent red flags where there aren't any. It's that recognition of them that's really the challenge.
Yes, definitely. And also what you touched upon very shortly, I think it's the amount of guilt and shame that comes along with it.
Oh, because, well, guilt and shame.
Yeah, because I think when you recognize the red flags happening, you also have to be very aware of the fact that this happens. Your body just acts. It doesn't have anything to do with being guilty. It just happens. And if you're not aware of it, also you're not guilty of anything, like you said.
Yeah. There's a distinction as well. So people use the words guilt and shame quite interchangeably, but they are radically different things. And it, part of my process of healing and recovering from trauma and getting to a point where I could be authentic, to touch back on the previous talk, was that differentiation. It's really simple. Guilt is feeling bad for something that you've done or failed to do. Shame is feeling bad about who you are. An example would be, we're taught to feel ashamed if we're gay. We're taught to feel ashamed if we're transgender. We're taught to feel ashamed if we didn't pass an exam and we didn't become a lawyer when every generation before us have been lawyers. Or that. You're not a lawyer. You're not straight. You're not white. You're not this. You're not that. Therefore, you should feel shame for that identity that you have. Whereas guilt is quite often, and it ties into the recognition of red flags a lot, I think, because if you've grown up in a house that's filled with trauma, and then you feel guilty for creating a situation where there are red flags, I shouldn't have said that. I said that, so he hit me. Well, I shouldn't have said that. If I didn't say it, he wouldn't have hit me. It's my fault. I created that situation. And so you normalize the process of trauma and that pattern, and therefore you're very aware of the red flags, but you feel that you've created them sometimes. That's really, really toxic.
It is, yes. And I think it's also very good to recognize this, because then you internalize what happens. And I think for some people it's the most easy thing to do, because if you can blame yourself on something, then you can also solve it yourself or something, or but it won't work like that.
No, it doesn't. Not on that scale. The solution to being in an abusive relationship, for example, is not to say to yourself, I shouldn't have said that, I shouldn't have done that, I shouldn't have. The situation, that the only power you've got that solves it is to leave that relationship.
Yeah.
That's because everything's a red flag. The whole relationship's a red flag. And so it's about perspective. And before we recorded this, we had that chat about somebody who has made a complaint in the workplace in about a senior member of staff. And when I heard what they had made a complaint about, I was like, ah, shit, that's quite insignificant. But then I realized I've become desensitized because of the amount of trauma I've had to go through. And I feel I've healed from most of it. I'm aware of most of the red flags that go on around me and the threats that I face. But actually, there are still things that are not acceptable, but I still tolerate them because they're so normalized. So I still have healing to do.
Yeah, that's a very important one also to notice. And it's important to hear about the experiences of other people. Because sometimes when you talk about your own experience in a certain environment as a certain person, let's say a woman in a maritime sector, I think this is a really good example.
It really is.
When you talk about that with other people who come from a different world or a different sector or with a different gender, then sometimes they are amazed or very alarmed by some of the things you're saying. But in fact, you are not alarmed. It's, oh, but this is just a tiny thing. And then you start talking about the bigger things and they're absolutely flabbergasted or scared or very alarmed. So it's very important to talk about things like this and to actually give examples of what remarks, for example, can be very hurtful for somebody. So I think in the situation which I explained, like the captain and also the other people around me making remarks about me getting pregnant or any woman getting pregnant, that's a big thing if you tell that to your colleague who is there on an equal perspective but doesn't have a woman, doesn't have the ability to carry a child or to become pregnant. That's a big thing because how it works out in your life can be so super different.
And any discussion like that is completely unacceptable in the workplace. I look at that from even a different perspective. As a transgender woman, I can't have the ability to be pregnant and carry a child, and it's a source of enormous pain to me. And it's something I had to grapple with for a long time to accept that. And I still haven't accepted it, really. But it's my reality. So even talking about that kind of thing, I recognize the trauma that creates and the normalization of discussions and even the recruitment process. Oh, she's a woman of about 30. She's going to get pregnant, have children, and take time off work. How do you know that? Why are you saying that? What's that got to do with anything? Or saying, oh, there's a room full of men and women in the professional environment, and you refer to the women as girls.
Oh, yeah.
And that thing, I hate that thing. And all of those are red flags for a toxic environment. But there are millions of other red flags for toxic environments as well. And I think you could recognize it through the small things. Like, I think, like, are the bins emptied? Are surfaces kept clean? Is there order in the chaos? Are people taking pride in their existence? Are people happy to communicate? Or are they scared to speak? Not just about what you said, but about anything. So I think clear communication is critical because it indicates that there isn't an atmosphere of paranoia and suppression. And that's a really big thing. If you've got open communication, things that are unhealthy are a lot easier to identify. That doesn't work here. We can't do that.
Yeah, that's really important. And maybe a good topic to close this conversation with, because that will make a solution, right? First of all, I can talk with you about this for hours and hours. I'm happy to make more podcast episodes together. So if you like hearing this, by the way, please comment below and let us know, because then we can talk about this and make it for you.
What else would you like to hear us talk about? Because even I could talk about anything.
Do you have suggestion what you would like our perspectives on? Then please let us know, because then we can take that for the next episode. That's a good idea. Thank you. Okay, so let's talk about solutions. So what you just touched upon, I think, is a very good solution. So let's say you have a diverse and inclusive team of people, then keeping it safe is a dynamic process, right? It will change and it depends on all kinds of things. It depends on the feelings of people about the environment you're working in, about what happens, the situation you're in, the situation all the individuals are in. It's so dynamic. So I think what you just said, communicating clearly and transparently, is a really good way to actually keep things safe. And if you keep it safe, then you can also keep it inclusive for everyone. If something makes you feel uncomfortable or can feel that a red flag is raised, like you just did when I talked about how my colleagues talking about pregnancy, or that is a red flag for me in my system, but it looks entirely different than your red flag in your system.
Yeah,
that's a really interesting way of seeing it. So I think what we notice also right now is that it's so insightful to talk about this. Because when you know how it looks, then you can actually do something about it, right?
Sure. Obviously, pregnancy is a big one, because if for any woman, if they're infertile or they're transgender or they don't want children, but they can have them, or every woman has a different story. And it's such a personal thing. that bringing it up in a workplace, unless you are actually an obstetrician and you give birth to children on a daily basis or assist in that process, why are you talking about it? What's it got to do with you? You're literally talking about the sexual behavior of your colleagues at work. You might as well be talking about what position they like to sleep in, or if it's the same thing. It's a really private, intimate matter.
Yes, definitely.
But red flags, recognizing them, I think it starts with, if you want to say something or you want to do something, whether it's at work or in any other environment, and you feel that you can't, ask yourself why you can't. Why can't I say it? Why can't I do that? Is there a good reason, or is it just, I'm scared. I'm scared of what that person will think. I'm scared of what my boss will do. Scared of what my partner will do. If you feel that you're not able to do something that you think is a normal thing for you to do or should be normal, why aren't you doing it? There's a problem there you need to solve.
Definitely. Definitely. And it helps to reach out, right, to others.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So I think that would be a nice one to let people know, because I think if you're in connection with yourself, in connection with people around you, even on the phone or by chatting, or if you're in connection, then you can more easily see what you need, right, to do the things that you want to do, and to also figure out what keeps you from doing this.
Funny enough, I found that the website Reddit can actually be quite helpful with some of these things. There's a Reddit thread called Am I the Asshole, where people will say, I did this and my partner did that, or I did this and my boss did that. Am I the asshole, or are they the asshole? And quite often, you'll find some really insightful comments. You'll get a lot of idiots on there as well, but you'll find some really genuinely helpful comments that help you decode. Because once you're in a situation and you're struggling to decode it and have situational awareness, it's really hard for you to regain it. And you do need to reach out and do need some extra support. And even something as simple as going to a website and saying, this is my situation. I want to do something about it. Am I right or am I wrong? The perspectives from people who are not attached to that can be incredibly useful.
That's super powerful that you notice this, because I think in any situation, it's good to ask yourself that very question. Is it me? What did I do? That's like the question of self-reflection you definitely want, because you have an opportunity to go out of it.
Mm-hmm. So
that's very powerful to see. And also, you can solve your unconscious bias by asking questions like that.
Yeah, totally. And ideally, I think a really good therapist is a great thing to have. I got through several therapists before I found one that was suitable for me. And a lot of people can't afford it. A lot of people don't have access or can't find one, or their therapist is genuinely useless. Because that happens a lot too. I see. That website I found and other resources online. It's useful.
It's very
don't
useful.
Don't be alone. Don't isolate yourself. Isolating yourself, it really amplifies the problem and it makes it harder to solve it. And it makes you more blind to the warning signs.
Definitely. Yes. It keeps you in this loop, right? Also. It's smaller and smaller, and then you end in this loop of depression in the end, where you can't
move.
Yeah.
I remember reading a story just last week where there was a woman. She had a couple of children with this man. They'd been married for 7 years. He had been gambling. He'd been cheating on her. He had been just damaging their lives for years. And she was working hard, and after work, she would come home, look after the children. She'd cook dinner for everyone. She'd do the shopping. She'd do the housework. He did none of that. And she is going online and she's asking, what have I done to destroy this marriage? I don't know why. She hasn't done anything. She's holding the whole thing together and he is doing everything to destroy it. And she's blaming herself for his behavior. And she's so detached from all of the red flags of his behavior, and she's looking in the mirror saying, what have I done? Why is he doing this? What have I done to hurt him so much? She's so detached. But after getting...
That's the actual problem, right?
Yeah, it's but like after getting... thousands of people replied. And they all said, no, it's not you, it's him. It's not you, it's him. Do this and do that. Get a lawyer. Go to a therapist. Get out of this relationship. Save yourself. Get the children out of there. And everyone was just saying no. And then she gave an update that said, yeah, I realize now it's not me. It's not me.
That's a really good example, by the way, because what you just described, the dissociation, it's a coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
With either fight, flight, or freeze, and this is a flight mode. It will just take you out of your own experience, and it will just make sure that you don't see what's going on, and you try to do everything to save it, to save behavior, to save your family, to make sure that...
Yeah. Or the workplace. You get toxic workplaces where... People are moderating their behavior because they're scared of things. Because you've got a boss that's a complete psychopath, or the family, the same thing. Anything can become very toxic. A neighborhood, anything.
Yeah.
And if you dissociate and you start blaming yourself, you're not going to solve the problem. It'll get worse.
And you get used to crossing your own boundaries again and again.
Yeah.
So what you need is other people... tell you that. And that's very good that you touched upon this subject, because I think it's very valuable to know, right?
As they say, I think recognizing that you're an alcoholic, for example, is half of the battle. Once you've recognized it, you can handle it. But recognizing that you need to even ask the question is the big battle. That's why I said, if you feel you can't say something or can't do something, and you're moderating your behavior and you feel uncomfortable with that, ask yourself why you're doing it and then reach out for help.
Yeah. That's a really good one. Thank you so much, Kim, for that very valuable insight and for the discussion today and being on the show with us today. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. I love hanging out with you anytime. Let's do it again.
Yes, let's definitely do it again. And if you listen to this, please let us know what you think and also what you want to hear next. You have been watching and listening to Maritime Unity with myself, Ava, and Kim. Thank you so much for listening, and see you again next time.